Running a Shopify store and drowning in shipping chaos? ShipStation can fix this for you. ShipStation goes beyond just shipping labels with advanced automation, batch processing, and shipping discounts that a single platform just doesn't offer. Like discounts up to 90% off major carriers. See how ShipStation can make shipping for your Shopify store better. Go to ShipStation.com and access all features free for 30 days. No credit card or contract required. Cancel anytime. That's ShipStation.com.
Welcome to What's Eric Eating, Culture Map's bi-weekly look at all things Houston bars and restaurants. I'm your host, Culture Map editor Eric Sandler. Today on the show, we'll talk about some news in the world of Houston restaurants, as well as a meal at a new Houston restaurant you may want to know about. To do that, I am joined by my co-host this week. She is a staff writer for The Infatuation Houston. Chelsea Thomas, welcome back to the show. How are you?
Hey, howdy. I'm doing great. How are you?
Well, I'm doing just fine. Let us dive right into the news of the week. Topic number one, Bobby Hugel and Peter Yanka are at it again, having successfully saved Catbirds, the Montrose neighborhood bar. They have taken on another project with the Blue Lagoon Club, which I am calling a dive bar in Spring Branch. Chelsea, let me just ask you, have you ever been to the Blue Lagoon? Because Quite frankly, it was not an establishment that I was familiar with when Bobby messaged me to tell me that he had done this.
I haven't been there, but in my time researching around Spring Branch for our Spring Branch guide and doing some Korean barbecue stuff over there, I did drive past it and I added it to my growing list of Houston dive bars that I keep track of on a Google Maps guide.
I know people get big in their feelings when I use the word dive bar that they they don't want to hear. They don't want people to call like Grand Prize a dive bar, right? It's too new, it's too clean, it's too this, it's too that. But I think that Blue Lagoon actually does meet most of the criteria. It's old, it's been around since the 70s. It is basically, as far as I can tell, like having been in there. Not during its operations, but to talk to Bobby and Peter, it's shabby. It's like the chairs look like they're from a middle school classroom. You know, they don't look like they're not like the standard looking bar and restaurant chairs. And it's got all the like sports memorabilia on the walls, the banners and the pennants and the all that stuff. So I think we're gonna I'm gonna go out on a limb and call say real actual dive. Like not Neo Dive, not yuppie, like hangout, like actual authentic dive.
I think it passes the smell test on that for sure. I'd give it dive bar status.
So then as you said, you haven't been there and I haven't been there. Mm-hmm. Does knowing that it now is under new ownership, does that make you more likely or more interested in wanting to go?
I don't know if it makes me more interested in wanting to go. I have a growing list of dive bars in the Houston area that I try to visit of my own volition just because they're my favorite kind of bar. So this has been on my list for a while, but I don't get to Spring Branch as often as I'd like. So I'm still interested in going, but knowing that it has new ownership that can keep it open, I think is what is more exciting.
Yeah, and I think that is kind of the big takeaway from this, or at least that's one of the things that Bobby, you know, wanted to emphasize to me when we talked, is that the property has come under new ownership, a real estate developer named Brian Dana, and I know that may not mean much to people, but his company, Revive Development, has the stomping grounds up in Garden Oaks. They own the church that became Loro in the Heights. They're Bobby's landlord at Squabble, for example. So, you know, this is a developer who's very active kind of in hospitality concepts. Mm-hmm. And that most people probably would have either torn the building down or like gutted it and turned it into I don't know what, like there's a, the Torchies is too close for it to have become a Torchies, but you know, like they would not have kept it as a very casual neighborhood dive bar. They would have figured out a way to change it in some way that would allow it to make more money than it will in its current iteration and then pay them more rent. So this is kind of an unusual situation, at least in Houston.
Yeah, I mean, I'm very thankful that's an unusual situation. I think a lot of dive bars are disappearing, which is very sad because they are great watering holes. And it's nice that this real estate developer had a relationship with someone who was in a position to be able to take it over and maintain it and keep it open and maybe make it profitable at some point. So I'm glad that the two of them have that relationship, and I hope more real estate developers see that the value in keeping neighborhood places like this and not turning them into, you know, a cookie cutter, same as the next block kind of place.
Yeah, I think that's well said. And I think, you know, part of the reason that the developer was open to this idea is because he's been to Catbirds. And we should just say, in my opinion, it's been a very successful transition from the old owner of Catbirds to Bobby and Peter. And it's kind of accomplished that a very tricky thing in the bar world, which is to sort of preserve the old character, right? They didn't change very much. They added a pool table. Mm-hmm. They repainted the walls, but in the same color, you know, stuff like that. They kept the prices on the beers and some of the basic cocktails, but also like bring in like more spirits, better beer, that kind of stuff, and bring in that kind of younger crowd. And so you get this kind of old and new mixing together and everybody's having a good time. And I think that's kind of the vision for Blue Lagoon, right? Like all those Spring Branch people who love it can still go there and it's still available to them. But, you know, they'll add just enough so that like when the, you know, the cooks at Bar Blue Dorn and Credence get off, right? when they're done with their shifts at 10:30 or 11 o'clock, that instead of, you know, that Blue Lagoon becomes their like hangout spot.
Yeah. I mean, I think the transformation of Catbirds, which wasn't a transformation at all, it was literally just like they mopped and added a pool table, I think was great. I have been to Catbirds before. They took it over when I was 21, 22, and trying to figure out which Montrose bar was going to be the place that I went to the most. And I definitely was too young, I think, at the time to fit in with the Catbirds people. Because it's definitely more of a chill, just kind of low-key hangout spot that I maybe was not at the age to, I wasn't at the age to be chill yet, so I don't think I got it. But, you know, now I really appreciate what they've done with Catbirds because it's a great bar. It's a great dive. They really didn't do much to it. They preserved what was really wonderful about it. And I think that's the nice thing about what I hope they're going to do with Blue Lagoon is just taking what was already really great about the bar, which is, you know, its character, the patina it has as a dive bar, and just keeping it in place. And yeah, adding a couple little things to just maybe get some more neighborhood people coming out or get some younger people who maybe recently moved to the area to check it out. And I think there's really not a lot you have to do with dive bars. That's kind of the really fantastic thing about them is the character and the beauty of them are built in. So what's to change, you know?
Right. You know, a frozen drink machine, mm-hmm. you know, some new paint.
Sure.
Clean up the bathrooms. Like, you know, don't, you know, just improve. Right. And I think the success that they've had at Catbirds should give, you know, nervous Blue Lagoon regulars like some confidence that, you know, these interloopers are not going to ruin your dive bar, which of course, Chelsea brings us to the, you know, just to briefly, I don't want to get too lost in the weeds on this, but, you know, as I was kind of sitting there with Bobby and Peter, we started sort of riffing about what other dive bars, like, would they be open to purchasing? And they sort of threw out Shiloh Club and Bobby's like, no, actually, you know, Shiloh Club changed hands a few years ago, and it's a couple who met there and really loves it. So that's probably not in the cards. You know, I think during the cocktail draft, we sort of riffed on D&W in the East End and the way that they like perfectly tie the napkins around the long necks of every beer.
And so,
of course, like they would purchase, you know, D&W in a heartbeat. Not that it's for sale. Not that they're like angling to take it from whoever currently owns it. Just, you know, if presented with the opportunity in a sort of hypothetical way. So let me just ask you, since you, as you said, have a Google map of dive bars that you curate obsessively, what are like one or two places where, like, if the choice were it's going to be closed forever or sold to Bobby and Peter, like what are a couple of places that you would be like, these need to be preserved at all costs?
Well, number one, I was thinking about this question because I have the list I have is about 40-ish bars. And I was like, okay, how do I narrow this down about what I want to keep? And obviously D&W Lounge is one of them because that was on my bar draft and I love that place. But I think my number one place that I would want to preserve in Amber in the exact way that it is currently is Rose Garden, which a part of me doesn't even want to say that out loud because I don't want a ton of people to go there. But I think Rose Garden is just like the perfect dive bar. It's super tiny. The parking lot is just rocks. It's not even a parking lot. It's just kind of like on this weird corner back in the Heights near Airline. And it's beer and setups, which is just beautiful. There is a pool table. There's a couple little machines. They do a little chili competition every year. It's quiet in there. I don't even think they have music playing. It's just like, you know, a couple older bartenders, the regulars. It's beautiful. It's got this cute little rose on it. And the woman who owns it, Rose, it's great. And I think that place should never be taken away from us. So lovely. It's just like like you go in there and it's like an immediate like noise canceling headphones, but like, you know, pre-internet, like it's just quiet and kind of block out everything. And you can bring whiskey and they'll give you some soda if you want it or not. You could just take shots and have a few highlights and chill, and it's great. So that would be number one on my list, and I wouldn't want anything to change about it, like not even any enhancements other than, like, you know, clean, but that's it.
Yeah, clean floors and clean glassware. That's about all you can ask for.
Clean and that's it. Yeah, that's all I want. I think I have such a long list. I think the only other place I would say would be, and the owners of this place are not necessarily young, but they're young enough that I don't think, you know, again, I'm saying this all to say these people should do whatever they want with their bars and give it to whoever they want. But given that Bobby Hugel's business model is now my dream, I'm going to just kind of subtly influence some things, I guess. I think the other place would be, and this is like probably really left field, but I really love Harrisburg Country Club, which is a bar on the east side. It's across the street from, it's kind of like catty corner from the corner of Harrisburg and Milby. So across the street from the new 8-Row Flint that's over there.
Yeah, like right around the corner from Voodoo Queen, I guess.
Yes. Yeah. It looks like a, like kind of like an old hall, it looks like where I used to go when I was a kid and they do like little mini rodeos, like one of them is like metal buildings. And it's got no AC, which is super fun, and like four pool tables that desperately need some attention. And there's an older couple that owns the bar, and the husband does all the food, so they have like great burgers and crinkle cut fries, and the wife runs the bar, and they have like a internet radio kind of situation, so a lot of the regulars just put on whatever. But it's actually huge in there. It's like kind of a hall size, so you could do like, I've always wanted to have a big party there, but you know, it's hard with the lack of any kind
The lack of AC is unappealing.
Air conditioning, environmental controls is a little rough. But the wife has put all these beautiful plants in there. So there's like all these, big, you know, house plants that are really pretty. And so I think if they took that one over, keep the food as it is. Don't make it fancy, please, for the love of God. Keep it just, you know, whatever it is, just cheap, just a burger, just fries, just some, you know, little sandwiches, hot dogs. But yeah, AC would be great. I think, yeah, some attention to the pool tables, maybe just like refinishing them, refelting or something going on. And maybe, yeah, a few extra little booths or something. Like, I would love to see like a karaoke setup or a dance floor in there to really make it a country club. But I love the name. I love the name that it's a country club. It's like not. It's so funny. And I think it's just kind of in the middle of all these warehouses and off the side of the train tracks right there. So there's really nothing great you could put there anyway. So I think that would be a fun one to see given a little bit of love, mostly in the form of air conditioning.
Yeah. All right. Let's move on to topic number two. Breaking news as of Monday morning is that Maximo, the Mexican restaurant that is part of Local Foods Group that evolved out of El Topo, has been rebooted. It only opened in April of last year, but they have already kind of switched things up, which is kind of a Local Foods Group thing to do. What had been a casual kind of taqueria with the burger and maybe some fajitas and queso is now like a pretty, like a more upscale Mexican restaurant, kind of built around this guy, Adrian Torres, who's a 26-year-old chef who obviously worked at El Topo and before that at both Sochi and what must be the first, they say they worked at Belly of the Beast. That must be the very first, the spring, the original like Old Town Spring version.
Yeah.
Because he's been at El Topo since Belly of the Beast relocated to its current version. Now, I know that Maximo was on the infatuation list of the best new restaurants of 2024. So before we talk about what's happening, can we just say something nice about what was? Because I actually really liked the original, more casual iteration of Maximo.
I liked it too. I think this is where we put in the music of like, you know, In the Arms of the Angels or something. Play some sad eulogy music for Maximo. I thought it was really cute. I loved Maximo.
End of the Road by Boyz II Men, maybe.
Yeah.
He Talks to Angels by not Counting Crows, Black Crows. Thank you. Sorry. I'm here.
Yeah, the editing goes all fuzzy and soft and black and white here, but Maximo was great. We did put it on our hit list at the Infatuation. It was on our Best New Restaurants of 2024 list. I thought the burger there was great. Queso was good. The drinks were fun. You can't really get better than soft serve in a miniature baseball helmet, you know, unless you're at Minute Maid Park. And I liked what they did with the space. They made it much more like guest friendly because El Topo felt a little cramped. And they have that great big patio. And I thought it was a really nice addition to West University, just down the street from Tiny's and next to Little Matt's. But, you know, I know the local foods group likes to remix things as they just did with Lee's. And this is one of those too. And so I'm excited. I'm excited to try the menu. I know that it's opening, it opens, January 15th? So this week. And
yeah, it opens Wednesday for dinner.
Yeah, Wednesday for dinner. So it looks very interesting. And I like the other revamps from this group. I mean, we just all opined about how much we love Milton's recently. So that, you know, it's the same thing. And so far, Lee's has been really interesting. The new cocktails there are really fun. And I know that the food is kind of a snacky version of what they have at Maximo, the food at Lee's. So I feel like I've come to expect really nice things from this group, so I'm excited to see how it goes.
Yeah, you know, it's funny because I went to Milton's, I think, the day before you went to Milton's,
Yes.
and I saw Seth Siegel Gardner, who's their culinary director, and he said, I had been in kind of a bad mood, like I was not having a great day. And then I did a tasting with Chef Adrian at Maximo as we were finalizing the menu, and it like lifted my spirits. And
Oh.
I obviously I recognize that to a certain extent it is Seth's job to kind of fluff me up and tell me things like that. But
Sure.
also, like Seth Siegel Gardner is not like really prone to exaggeration and or that kind of like, you know, PR puffery. So I don't think
You
he would
don't
have
think
said
he's
it
a
if it.
super whimsical guy? He's not like really. I'm
I
just
mean,
kidding.
he's a really talented chef with a kind of
Yes.
quirky sense of humor, but I don't think he would just like make something up. Like, I don't think he would have
No.
just told me that if it weren't true. And
Mm-hmm.
so I'm like you, right? Like I liked O'Tour. I like Milton's more. I liked Lee's Den as a wine bar. I had a really good first experience at Lee's as a cocktail bar. And so I kind of think like just like with Bobby and Peter at Blue Lagoon, they've earned the benefit of the doubt, right? If Maximo wasn't working for them for whatever reason, or that initial excitement to have just like burgers and tacos in the space like didn't sustain itself through the summer and the fall, and they felt like they wanted to switch things up. And also like if Benji Levitt and Seth believe in Adrian Torres and want to give him a venue to kind of showcase his talent and do like more sophisticated Mexican food and expand the Masa program and all that stuff. Like, I am excited to try that food.
Yeah, I mean, I know that, and of course I'm joking, like Seth is a great guy, he's a great chef, and I know that he really believes in the people that work with him, and he wouldn't just fluff you up for no reason. So I know that he seems very excited about this food, so I'm interested to try it. And I know that they listen to the people that come to their restaurants. They listen to what they like, they listen to what they don't like, they respond. And I wonder, maybe the West University group neighborhood, the people who are coming the most often were like just coming for dinner, or maybe they were just getting certain food items, or maybe they were giving them feedback. And I have a feeling they probably listened to them and also took into account the talent that they already have in-house, and hopefully put something together that's really wonderful for everyone. And I am sad that the original Maximo is closed, because I'm like, oh, I actually really enjoyed it. And I heard nothing but fabulous compliments about the brunch. So I wonder if they'll bring back any kind of brunch service. That would be interesting. But I'll be excited to go again and hopefully makes our hit list again, and we'll see what happens for them in 2025.
Yeah, you know what's funny is like I thinking about it, talking about this with you, like I am one of those people. Like I went to Maximo
Yeah.
like maybe three or four times when it first opened in April, and then just like, you know, spun off and like got distracted by other shinier things. For me, mostly like Little Rave when I was wanting like a new casual taco concept. Like I just found myself gravitating to Little Ray. And so I didn't go back to Maximo in the fall. And so, you know, not that it's my fault, but you know, like I think this feedback that like people were initially excited about it and then their interest waned is, at least in my limited experience, true. And so, you know, looking at this menu with, you know, masa cornbread and this, you know, masa crusted halibut and a smoked pork chop and some of the other things that they're doing, I'm like, I'm intrigued. You know, there's a tetella on the menu now. There's a cochinita pibil sope, like really like leaning into like more traditional Mexican flavors and techniques with also like some kind of fun twist to kind of keep people engaged. And you know, I like this kind of creative Mexican fare. Like I really like Belly of the Beast. You and I have talked endlessly about how much we like Emma. You know, we both really like Totemo. And so, you know, Like the more kind of young, talented, ambitious Mexican chefs like want to like play around and show what they can do, I'm all in for that. So, you know, bring on Maximo 2.0.
Yeah, I think this whole like push towards supporting these younger chefs that have this background that they want to express, I think that's very much in the zeitgeist right now, especially with the popularity of Emma, with things that have happened and the accolades that Tatemo has received. I mean, my true love is Cochinita & Co. over in the East End. I mean, I can't tell you how, I feel like I've been there 100 times, especially when I lived on the East Side. And I think that is a special part of Houston, is like this kind of community of cuisine. And it's really exciting. And it's really nice that these people are staying here in Houston to make this kind of food, and that they're not going somewhere else to make it, and that we can provide a home for them for this kind of food, for these kind of places. And I think what's nice is all of them are a little different. Like Emma's more of this like bakery brunch lunch situation. Tatemo is got the tasting menu. Cochinita's like an all day coffee cafe with tacos and you know, those great bowls that they do in the breakfast. And now you've got this new version of Maximo that wants to come in and maybe fill kind of like a maybe casual dinner space. Like, you know, I'm thinking kind of Nobie's, Nancy's level kind of stuff.
Yeah, right. If it's the West U Mexican mm-hmm. Nobie's / Nancy's, like that would be a very, I think everyone affiliated with that restaurant would be very excited to have it like considered to be a peer of those restaurants. I think that would be a very positive outcome.
Yeah. And I know that like my cousin and his wife, they live over in West University, and they were really excited that Maximo was in there. Because they're like, anything that opens in West U is a big deal. Cause it's like, you know, it's like this small town in the middle of Houston. So everybody knows what's going on. And, I think, you know, the more masa, the better. So I'm excited.
Absolutely. All right. And then just topic number three, again, I don't want to get too in the weeds on this, but I thought we should acknowledge the closing of Roca Accor, the Chicago-based steak and sushi restaurant. I did not realize until I got the press release telling me to close that it's been almost 8 years. It opened in 2017, and you know, it's got that kind of interesting location in the high rise at the corner of Wesleyan and West Alabama. And so, you know, it's a funny sort of thing, because I just had Alex Smith on the show from Atlas Restaurant Group. And of course, Azumi, their restaurant and sushi restaurant in River Oaks District, is in some ways pretty similar to Roca Accor. Maybe it doesn't have quite the same beef program, but it's that kind of modern upscale sushi restaurant. And my first thought when Roca Accor closed was, oh man, you know, if they had opened this in River Oaks District instead of at the corner of Wesleyan and West Alabama, it would probably still be open.
Yeah, I think it's unfortunate after 8 years to close, but I mean, I hope that those 8 years were good to them. But yeah, that location is difficult because you're sandwiched in between Central Market and then everything in that, the Costco Edwards Cinema Megaplex shopping center of it all. So it's just sort of a weird nothing buffer zone. I mean, you've got the creepy windowless AT&T building right there. And so, I mean, the building itself at Roca Accor is in is very nice, but yeah, I think it's just kind of a strange nothing zone. So that's difficult. Location is always hard with restaurants, but also like the amount of sushi restaurants that we have in this town is wild. Like it is a clown car full of sushi restaurants, which is kind of insane given how big this city is. So I think, you know, there's only how many sushi restaurants can one city support?
Well, and all doing like not exactly the same thing, but,
sure.
But you know, if I were living like in River Oaks and we're just like trying to figure out It's like, okay, we want sushi. We want something that's a little more, that feels like a little nicer inside than Katarabata and is maybe a little more fusion-y. We don't want to spend all the way up to Kitami, or maybe we're doing something, we're going west for whatever reason. All right. Mm-hmm. So we're like trying to pick, and it's like, well, you could have gone to Rokkakor, mm-hmm. or you could go to Izumi, or you could cross 610 and go to Uchiko, or you could go to Nobu, and you know, and like, you know, I don't know kind of how you decide between those, other than just based on like whatever's close to you or wherever you, you know, maybe you have a server you know or a particular dish that you like, because they're all kind of delivering a similar experience, and it's a pretty good experience. It's also an expensive experience. Mm-hmm. You know, but I knew Rokkakor was in trouble when I started getting emails about like, oh, you know, two can dine for a discounted price, or here's their special menu that's less expensive. I was like, this can't be like, you know who doesn't run special discounted menus is Uchi. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. Like, so, you know, successful restaurants like typically don't. So when restaurants start doing that, it always makes me nervous. And so I can't say I was completely surprised that Rokkakor closed, but I mm-hmm. will say, like, I've gone there over the years and I've had good meals there. And so, mm-hmm. you know, that it's just sort of poof gone is a little bit sad.
Yeah. I think also 2017 when it opened was like, you know, Uchi Houston had been open for 5 years at the time. And it, so it was really, I mean, that place has always been a machine, but I think it was really at its height around, you know, 2015 to 2017 was like still extremely popular. So I think, and this was before you had a big surge of sushi restaurants opening. So I think it held on to its lead in the race there for a while. But yeah, I think, you know, it's unfortunate to have to close after such a long time, but I think that it just goes to show you like location can mean a lot. I think also just competition with where you're at can mean a lot, and making sure that you're like maybe providing a different price point or providing a different experience. And like you said, I think that it can be hard to choose when you have a lot of maybe similar things surrounding you.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's well said. And I think that is a good place to wrap up the news of the week. So mm-hmm. we will be right back with our restaurant of the week. Stick around. Chelsea, for our restaurant of the week, I want to talk to you about Fufu Dim Sum and Hot Pot. This is the new location of Fufu Cafe. It's a little bit west. You know, the Fufu Cafe was in Dunhuang Plaza, which is the big development that's just east of Beltway 8 on Bel Air Boulevard. That's got Tiger Den and Hyundai 33 and Mensho and Banana Leaf and dozens and dozens of others. And now it's a little farther west. It's at Kirkwood in the same shopping center as Haikang, the seafood restaurant. And so before we get into the new Fufu, I know you were a fan of Fufu's older location.
Yeah, Fufu Cafe. I think one of the first times I ever went to Chinatown when I was 16, 17, was to go to Fufu Cafe at like 1 a.m. With a bunch of friends after probably some punk show. And I immediately loved it. I was like, this is great. I'm never leaving. And so I've had a lot of great experiences at Fufu over the years. And I think maybe part of that's nostalgia. I remember when because it was originally just the cafe. And then a few years back, they opened the restaurant kind of on the other side of the plaza next to Camel Inn Bakery. And that was a bit of a different experience, less focused on kind of the fast, you know, maybe more small plates, dumplings and snacky things centered stuff that the cafe did and more plates. So I was sort of loyal to Fufu Cafe, and I went there many, many, many times over the year. So it was kind of sad to see that it was abandoning its old post.
All right, so let's talk about Fufu Dim Sum. I've seen this on social media. Obviously, you know, Chowdown in Chinatown, the Facebook group is very helpful for goings on in that part of Houston.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was intrigued, right? Because as you said, you know, like Fufu Cafe had this great reputation. And so I was curious to see what they would do with the dim sum of it all. And, you know, we encountered a place that is like, you know, has all of the dumplings and chow fun and noodles and everything that you would sort of expect from a modern dim sum restaurant.
Yeah, it was interesting to see how they changed the menu, because, you know, they had the regular menu that they had was pretty much the exact same one they had at Fufu Cafe and restaurant sort of combined with all the things you would expect. But then they mightily expanded the dim sum menu, and you get your own, you know, write, check off what you want dim sum menu on the side, which was new. And it's a huge space. I mean, it's massive. It felt like a little unfinished, which is fine, because I mean, they literally just opened, but it's much, much, much bigger. And I think that that's going to change a lot of things about maybe how they are as a restaurant. And I mean, you could already see the difference. Like, they actually had really good service, which was lovely, because I think one of the kind of characters of the original Fufu Cafe was kind of a bit of the attitude of the service, or how quick it was. So you could tell they've changed a little bit in that respect, a little more customer service.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know that I would call it like effusive, but it was prompt,
yes.
And it was attentive, and little stuff like, you know, keeping water glasses refilled, bringing more tea, making sure the dishes came out quickly and hot. Mm-hmm. They had all of that stuff like pretty well locked down. You know, we went with a couple friends of yours, so we had like four hungry people, and mm-hmm. so we're able to just order like very expansively. You know, I thought everything was, you know, I really liked basically everything we tried. I you know, the haigao, the shumai, the noodles, you know, the broccoli. Like I really enjoyed what we ate.
Yeah, I thought it was good. I don't necessarily think it's, I think you and I talked a little bit, it's not competing with Ocean Palace or Fung's for me, or you mentioned Din Tai Fung. It's definitely not in that echelon, but you know, it's similar to Golden Dim Sum, or I think HK Dim Sum, where it's solid, good. It's not going to blow your mind, but you know, if you want to eat like a crap load of dumplings and rice noodles stuffed with shrimp, you can totally do that, and very quickly.
Yeah, its pricing is competitive. Its quality mm-hmm. consistent with other similar restaurants.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I'm sort of intrigued by the hot pot aspect. Obviously, we only have so much, you know, stomach capacity when we go out on these adventures. So we sort of contemplated hot pot and then decided not to, which I think was the right decision.
Yeah.
Or even looking at the rest of the menu, right? There's a whole like, you know, kind of wok-based entree aspect of the menu going on that, as you said, from the previous location that we didn't touch really, other than an order of scallion pancakes, which I mean, what's not to like? You know, I don't think I've ever had a scallion pancake I was unhappy about.
Yeah, I don't think I've ever been to Fufu without ordering it, so it felt like I had to.
But you know, like I would say, you know, if you've got a craving for shumai and haigao, you know, this is a solid option.
Yeah, and I think, you know, there aren't a ton of dim sum restaurants in Houston. There's, I mean, I think for us, I think for smaller cities, we have like 8 or 9. And you know, we keep updating our dim sum guide at the Infatuation. And so this will be a nice addition to that. But I think, yeah, if you want cart service, you're not going to get that here. This is definitely just an order and it comes out kind of thing. But yeah, it was fun. I mean, what's not to love about dim sum? Plus, you know, we only went with four people, but if you go with the big group, they have those huge, fancy, spinning Lazy Susan tables, which was very futuristic, which is super fun. Like, it's not just a stand, like a, you know, a table that doesn't move with a Lazy Susan. The whole table is the Lazy Susan. So I was like, yeah, they're doing it up at the new Fufu. They have like four different kinds of chairs, a bunch of different kinds of tables. They're putting big screen TVs on the wall, fish tanks, you know, they're doing it all.
Yeah, they were putting a big screen TV on the wall literally while we were eating there with a loud electric grill, which, you know, when you're talking about like the customer service has improved, yes, it has, but yes, they're still like a little bit indifferent to the presence of their customers, right? Like
they've retained a little bit of that character, which I'm very happy about.
And, you know, I should say, like, we kind of stuck to the classic stuff, but then there was also five spice beef tripe.
Yeah,
that our friends really enjoyed. So
yeah, they really liked it. They thought it was a nice texture, just spicy enough, clean. So yeah, if you want chicken feet tripe, they got it. They got that too.
Yeah, so you know, it maintains that kind of very traditional, like acquired taste kind of stuff, along with like all the greatest hits.
Yeah, it does make me wonder though if we're going to see more of the. I hesitate to say old school places, but maybe the older restaurants that have been in Dunhuang Plaza or have been on the east side of the Beltway along Bel Air, if we're going to see more of them move onto that west side. Because there's starting to become this separation between Chinatown and sort of this little Saigon area that's sprung up on the west side. And I guess historically, Houston's Chinatown loves to migrate, you know, from downtown to midtown to Bel Air to now even further down Bel Air. So, you know, I wonder if some of those older places are going to get kind of maybe over the congestion that tends to happen in that plaza and maybe move to a less busy space.
Well, yeah, in other like retail environments, a landlord will only allow like one of a certain kind of restaurant in any given shopping center, right? That there's contractual obligations that prohibit them from opening, you know, two burger places next door to each other or whatever. That doesn't exist at Dunhuang Plaza. I remember that the owner of Bel Air Food Street, which is the kind of food focused strip center that's like just a little bit farther east on Bel Air, once referred to Dunhuang Plaza as a very pure form of capitalism, in the sense that you know, if there's one ramen place or one shaved ice place, you know, in 6 months there'll be another one or two more or however many, and they all just have to kind of fight it out.
Yeah, I mean, there's like what, a dozen bubble tea places in Dunhuang Plaza, and then you have Juice Box next to New Ice, next to Star Snow Ice, like right in the corner.
Right, exactly right. So it wouldn't surprise me if some of these restaurants, as you said, are looking for more physical room, a better parking situation, and less like direct cutthroat competition by migrating again to this, like, you know, Chinatown, like, keeps going. Like, it, you know, it hasn't quite made it all the way to like Derry Ashford or even Highway 6 yet, but it does feel like over the course of the next several years, like, it's going to keep just pushing farther and farther west. And so, you know, I think the Fufu Dim Sum is kind of the latest example of that, like, expansionist tendency.
Yeah, because, I mean, it's a double-edged sword being in Dunhuang and being in, like, a couple of those centers that are on that east side, because they are crazy busy. I mean, it's absolute insanity to get around that parking lot at any time of day. So you do have like a built-in crowd, but a lot of times that crowd is going to like the new hot new thing. I mean, I've seen probably 30 or 40 different places that are the popular new dessert open and close within a year. So it's like, are you getting as much traffic as you think you're getting? Is it really worth it? Is it better to have a nicer, bigger space? You know, that's a lot to consider. So
right, I remember when rolled ice cream was a thing? I mean, you know, that came and went. With a quickness. God,
do I. That was a thing for a while, and then it became like everyone was obsessed with flavored soft serve, and then everyone just went back to bubble tea for a while. And yeah, so it's like then we had what the bubble egg waffles.
Oh yeah.
It's fun. It's so
now it's cheesecake.
Amazing. Yeah, it's cheesecake. No, it's amazing. And then there was the layered little souffle pancake guys. I mean, God, the different desserts that happen in and out of that plaza is amazing. I love it. I go to everyone. But yeah, I think there's a lot of room to be like, oh, if we're a banana leaf or if we're a, you know, another restaurant that's been in that plaza for a very long time, do we have enough clientele to get a different space? You know, something to think about. But I'm happy for Fufu.
Yes, I'm happy for Fufu. I think we've gone far enough into the weeds on this that I'm going to say that does it for the restaurant of the week. Chelsea Thomas, thank you very much.
Thank you so much, Eric. Great to talk with you.
That's it for today's show. Thank you so much for listening. Join me on Thursday when my guests will be Carrie Attar and Adele Gonclavis from Fielding's River Oaks.
Coda just made riding the bus easier than ever. Now you can pay your Coda fare by tapping your smartphone, smartwatch, or card, just like you do at the coffee shop or grocery store. Love paying with smart card? Keep doing that. Have a pass? Still works perfectly. Want to tap your phone? Now you can do that too. It's just one more way to move your way with Coda. Get moving now with Tap to Pay. Learn more at coda.com/tap.
There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit rightrug.com. RITERUG.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring.
Right here, right now.
One of the biggest challenges of earning a degree as a military veteran is transitioning your goals and experiences to your next phase in life. National University gets it. As a veteran-founded Yellow Ribbon School, they offer post-9/11 GI Bill acceptance, dedicated military support and advising services, and credit for your military experience. That's why 30% of their students are military-affiliated. NU, education that serves those who served.